All right, my guest on Profiles this week is a woman who seems to have lived a million lives. She's best known as an actress, having starred in almost too many shows and movies to mention. Benalandas, she was also in Trackers. She was in Nume Scully, Assignment, and in the US, she was in City of Angels and NYPD Blue. But Sandy Schultz has also been a children's TV presenter, a continuity announcer, a writer, producer, director. She's lived all over the world, from Belha to LA and Joburg, and she's got more than her fair share of incredible stories to tell from all the lives that she's lived and interesting characters that she's run into along the way. From next Friday, you can catch her reprising her role as Principal Daniels in season 2 of the Netflix drama Blood and Water. Before we meet her, let's take a listen to a clip from a previous role that she had. This is Sandy as Janina Mentz in the TV adaptation of D.N. Mayer's Trackers.
You have a beautiful home.
Thank you.
The neighbors must be impressed. I take it you'd like to keep all of this, Mr. Shabangu. We know about your meeting on the beach yesterday. And about the two bodies you left up in the Kruger.
The Kruger? The animal park. Bong Pegile, do I look like a tourist? I'm not a bull.
One of those dead boys belonged to you. But the other one, the white one, he was executed. We search this house, we find the gun that matches the bullet in his head. We will put you away for life.
There we go. That was Sandy Schultz starring in Trackers. Sorry, guys, I have to cough. I'm so sorry. There we go. Starring as Janina Mentz in the TV adaptation of D.N. Mayer's Trackers. Morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Sarah. Good morning, listeners. Thank you for having me.
No, what a pleasure. Sorry, we've been messing you around technologically because of issues our end, but it's great to have you. Listen, as I said in the intro, you seem to be someone who has lived a million lives, and not just personally lived a million lives, but career-wise, you've done all sorts. You've been, obviously best known as an actress, but you were a children's TV presenter, you were a continuity announcer, you've been a producer, a director. Not bad for a little damaged coloured girl from Belha, as you described yourself on Instagram a few months back. Tell us a little bit about Sandy's early years and where you are from whence you come.
Well, I guess if we're going to go way back, then I should say Franschhoek.
Ah.
Because my extended family is from Franschhoek. That's where my grandparents were from. And in fact, for about 3 years, I went to school in Franschhoek from 9 to 12. So Franschhoek is sort of where my main family is from. And then, of course, the Cape Flats. District 6, Elsies River, Eitzig, Belha. That's pretty much where I grew up, between Franschhoek and the Cape Flats.
What are your overwhelming memories of childhood? Was it a happy one? Was it a not happy one? Was it, like most of ours, a mix of both?
Pretty much. The happy memories are growing up with my cousins. There were a lot of cousins. My one aunt had 8 kids.
Wow.
And we would run wild. My aunt was a nursing sister in Lenkidok, as we called it then. I guess the more cultured pronunciation would be Langdok. But my cousins and I ran around it was like a forest, in Lenkidok, running over tree stumps and picking blackberries. And we'd literally go out in the morning and come back at the end of the day. We were just out running wild. So those are the great memories. There are a number of other not-so-great memories. You know, I think families are very good at keeping the dark family secrets.
Yeah.
And you don't say anything, you don't tell anyone, because it's the family secret.
There is a sense, and I think that that is true, particularly of certain, yes, it's true of all families, and secrets are nothing, you know, secrets are uniform. The family secrets, they don't care what your family looks like, but particularly in certain communities, I think our experiences are that we don't speak outside of the family. Family business is family business. The very worst thing that you can do is to hang your dirty laundry on the line and to invite people into your family business who it would be considered don't belong in there, even if the people that you're inviting in may be able to help. And I think that's probably why we end up, so many of us, quite damaged, isn't it? Because we are told that yes, you don't want people in your business, but very often the people who might be able to help you are the people that are being shut out. Was acting then a way out of some of the bad?
You know, I don't think that I realized it as a kid.
Yeah.
But I was constantly acting because I was spending so much time and energy keeping the secret for the family. Then I was constantly putting on a face. I was constantly playing the clown. I was constantly being really careful about what came out of my mouth. And so I guess I learned to act really early on. And I would say before acting, actually, the library is what saved me. I grew up in the library. The library was my safe space. It's sacred space. The library was my babysitter. I would go to the library every afternoon. I would read a book in the library, then take a book home, finish reading that by 5 o'clock, and ask my mom if I could go back to the library to go and get another one.
So often, Sandy, sorry, so often when I speak to creatives, be they musicians, be they writers, be they actresses, this is such a familiar story. It's my story also, and yet our childhoods could not have really been any further apart. But that thing of losing oneself in books and by association, losing oneself in story and then becoming a storyteller. What were some of the stories that you gravitated towards that moved you as a child, as a teenager, as a young woman?
Well, as a kid, I loved fairy tales.
Mm.
Oh, my word. I couldn't get enough of the Brothers Grimm or any kind of fairy tale. I think I wound up reading like Japanese or Chinese fairy tales as well. But literally, I would read whatever I could get my hands on. In the time that I lived in Franschhoek, I was very lucky. My grandfather had built a family house, like a traditional gabled family house with a loft. You climbed the stairs on the side of the house, and then there was a door, and you could go into the loft. And all the old family junk was stored up there, including the books that my uncle was a school teacher, and including his books from when he studied. And I would go up there, and whatever book I could lay my hands on, I would read. So including textbooks and really random, as long as there were words on a page, I would read them.
You outside of the acting, you really are a born creative. You are one of those people. I mean, you act, you dance, you write, you crochet beautifully. You make incredible clothes. Even your hair is a work of art. Do you believe that some people are just born, like born all rounders? And you know, the guests often that I have in this segment, and we speak about this sort of week after week, that thing of, and you've worked and travelled all over, but that as a country we embrace creatives and we accept that creatives are very rarely just born into one talent. Very rarely, as creatives, we can, you know, I can sing as well as I can right, nobody would know that, but I can. Yeah. I can sing and I can also act, which I haven't done for a very long time, but I can do that. You do that. You are somebody who really kind of runs the gamut of creativity and has been able to explore that here. We'll talk about your life in the States at another in just a second. But do you think that South Africa is a place where that is embraced, where we... And I think also as people of colour, we've had to be able to diversify. We've had to be able to use every skill available to us, right?
I think even as actors, we have the opportunity to do more in South Africa than elsewhere.
Yeah.
Like in the States, if you're a presenter of a kids show, that's what you are.
100%, yeah.
Or if you act in a daytime soap, that's it. You're locked into that niche. Whereas here, I love the fact that, yes, I started out presenting Kiddio, and then I was a continuity announcer, and then I acted in soaps, and I was a presenter, and I did musicals, and I did plays, and I did movies, and I could seamlessly just sort of segue from the one to the other. And I appreciate that about South Africa, that we have that opportunity. Personally, I like to describe myself as, a number one, a crafty vixen, and number two, compulsively creative. I honestly, if I'm stressed, I need to go out into what my husband used to call my R&D room and literally just go pick something up and make something.
Yeah.
Whether it's a piece of material off the floor that tells me what it wants to be, or get out my jewelry making supplies and start making earrings, or pick up a crochet hook and some wool and start crocheting or knitting. I have to create. It's almost like, you know, when you have a blow-up doll and you let the valve out to let the air out, that's me blowing off steam, is by creating.
If you're just joining us this morning, my guest on Profiles is actress, crafty vixen, Sandy Schultz. So you're going to be able to catch, actually, on in season two of Netflix, Blood and Water, from next Friday. We're going to be talking about that in just a second. How did you go from Franschhoek to Belhar to Joburg? How did you end up in Joburg?
It's a funny story, actually. First of all, I never thought I'd be an actor.
Right.
There was no money in my family for me to go and study. So the only way that I could go and study was to get a teaching bursary, which is how I managed to go to UCT. And then I met my first boyfriend, whose house I'm actually in right now, 40 years later.
Heavens!
And he had a friend who was at drama school, and he told me to come to the exams with him, to come and watch. And I watched the exams, and I thought, I could do that. And then he told me to audition, and kept insisting that I audition, and eventually I did, and I got in, don't ask me how. But I never imagined I'd be an actor. And then once I became an actor, I never imagined I would do anything but be on stage. And then suddenly, I wound up on television. And I was cast in, back then it was something called Sambo. I was cast in a commercial that was shooting in Johannesburg. And at the time, I had no work in Cape Town. And I literally packed two suitcases, wore three coats and three hats, got on a midnight flight and moved to Johannesburg with no idea what I was going to do. I was going to shoot the ad and then take it from there. And that's literally what happened. I got on a plane with two suitcases.
That's amazing.
That is how I wound up in Johannesburg.
Tell me the story of how you were evicted from a flat in Joburg when the guy who owned the building or the super found out that you weren't Portuguese, as he'd previously believed.
My mom came to visit.
Right.
I guess I have, you know, well, I've been to drama school. I went to UCT. So the way I speak is a little different to the average person who looks like me.
Yeah. Ditto.
And in any case, even before I went to drama school, people would ask me, where are you from?
Yeah.
You sound like you're from Johannesburg. So don't ask me. Anyway, one day my mom came to visit, and the supervisor of the building stopped us at the lift and spoke to us and looked at my mom in this very quizzical fashion. And the next thing I knew, I had an eviction notice because I was not Portuguese. Never mind that I never said I was Portuguese. it was just an assumption that was made. Yeah.
Yeah, that's extraordinary.
Yeah, those are the days we lived in.
Those are the days we lived in, indeed. Your first movie was in 1990. It was called The Sandgrass People. And you starred alongside Jamie Bartlett.
I did.
Is it right that that gig bought you your first car?
It bought me my first car. I literally got paid from that movie, went and bought a car, paid cash, then went to Scott, who was a co-presenter at Mnet at the time, and asked him to go and pick up the car because I couldn't drive yet. And then I got Dion Stewartson to teach me to drive. and that is how I got my first car and learned to drive at the age of 25.
Were you 25? That's amazing. I wonder if we can still get hold of the Sandgrass People anywhere, because I'd love to see you and Jamie Bartlett doing your thing.
Yeah, Jamie Bartlett with hair. I actually have never been able to find the movie anywhere, except if you search online, the movie is online.
How extraordinary.
Yeah.
How extraordinary. You don't age, though. So, I mean, Jamie Bartlett might not have any hair, but I'm imagining that if I did find it online, you probably wouldn't look any different. How did you go from a movie with a follically blessed Jamie Bartlett to living in L.A.?
I went to a psychic.
What?
I went to a psychic called Magda. A Polish woman called Magda.
Right.
In Benmore Gardens. And she said to me, you are going to meet a man. He's about 12 to 15 years older than you. He's divorced. He has two kids. He's from across the water. No. And he's probably an actor. And you're going to meet him in 2 months' time. And you're going to marry him. And all of that transpired.
No.
2 months later, I got an audition to play John Savage's girlfriend. I wound up being cast to play Lucky Dubé's girlfriend instead. And I was having my makeup done in the mirror, and this blonde, very cool but short guy came walking in behind me. And I saw him in the mirror, and I went, oh, hell no. Because by then, I'd already figured, this is probably the guy.
No. Did you really? You thought this is... So you gave everything that Magda said credence. This was obviously... I mean, obviously,
well,
you wouldn't have...
I didn't really. Until I got the audition.
Right. And you thought, here we go. It's happening.
And then I spent the next 4 years running away until I finally did marry him.
Right. So you go to Magda. Magda says all these things are going to happen. You then get an audition. This was for a local production.
Yes.
So the question really isn't how did Sandy end up going there, but rather what was John Savage doing here? He was just here for a movie.
John was sort of into human rights causes and, you know, liked to travel the world, and someone had gotten him to Namibia to do a movie there, and so he came from Namibia here, and then I think somebody else went, oh, John Savage is in the country, let's do this movie.
There he was. So that's happened. You've met him. Presumably he was divorced with two kids.
He was.
Extraordinary. You end up marrying him and living in Los Angeles. In what would have that been then? The mid-90s?
I left here in 93.
Right.
The beginning of 93.
In terms of culture shocks, leaving South Africa in 1993 to go to LA in 1993. I mean, again, because fundamentally you are still underneath it all, as much as you how you sound and the work that you've got. Cape Town and South Africa, or South Africa and LA are not the same place. What were your first few years like? What were your first few months like?
No, Cape Town and South Africa are not the same place, but let me tell you, a drama school like UCT creates quite arrogant little bastards.
Sure.
you kind of think that you can do anything and slot in anywhere.
Wow.
I don't, maybe I just assumed. And in any case, I felt incredibly superior to America because the only place I ever wanted to go was to England, of course.
Yeah.
But yes, it was a culture shock. And of course, the industry over there is completely different. However, I moved to a place called Topanga, which is, it used to be Hippieville. Now, I mean, you need so much money to be able to live there. But I went to Topanga and wound up staying on the same street for 12 years. And it's one of my favorite places in the world. It is beautiful. It's like going on holiday every time you drive up into the canyon. And yes, it was difficult. But I think what was more difficult for me was the reason why I left. So it wasn't so much the culture shock. I mean, the bottom line is I would never have left South Africa if it wasn't for the fact that I had been raped 6 months before I left.
Yeah.
And that is why I left. And so essentially my first year in America, in Los Angeles, were about the aftermath of being raped. And that trauma, you know, working through that trauma. So that's really essentially where my focus was. And gradually, I mean, Americans can be, you know, they have a bad reputation, but Americans can be incredibly lovely. And I have American family now. We might not be related by blood, but I now have American family, people who have crept so deep into my heart and who, even though I've been gone for almost 20 years, I still communicate with all the time. And we still, you know, plan on seeing each other. So I've made incredible friends.
Was it that brought you back? I mean, obviously, you and John got divorced. Was it, I mean, you could have stayed there or could you not? I mean, why did you end up coming back?
I could have stayed. I have an American passport. I came to my brother's wedding in 2005 for 2 weeks. And in those 2 weeks, I got offered a part on a soap that was just starting called Benelandish.
Mm.
And like, no, I'm going back to LA. No, I don't live here. And, I was persuaded to stay for, it was supposed to be 8 months and, it's now 16, 17 years later and here I still am.
And one of the, I suppose probably the best reason or the best result of you staying was that you met and then later married your late husband, Laszlo, and you married in 2016 after 12 years together.
Actually had met him in LA.
Ah.
He dropped me at the airport when I came for those 2 weeks and said, I'm not going to say goodbye. I don't like saying goodbye. I'll see you in 2 weeks' time. And then I had to call him and say, listen, actually, I've been offered this job. I'm not coming back. And the man was crazy. We'd been dating for about 6 months, and he said, okay, fine, I'm coming.
I didn't realize. So you'd met Laszlo in the States.
He loved telling people, because he had this thick Hungarian-American accent, and people would always ask him what he was doing here. And he loved saying, I followed my heart.
Oh. How have...
I came for love.
Yeah. How have you been in the last year? Because he tragically died following a heart attack last year. And you've, you know, they always say, don't they, that whoever they is, that the first year is the hardest because you're having to go through those anniversaries and moments without that person. How have you been doing and what has been helping you?
The first year is incredibly hard. All those first anniversaries.
Yeah.
The first birthday, the first Christmas, the first everything.
Mm. What sort of person was he, Sandy?
Oh, wow. Brilliant, gregarious, fun-loving. He would come up with ideas. If you shot down one idea, he'd come up with 12 more. And in that sense, and he just loved people. He was the absolute opposite of me. I am an introvert. Yes, it might sound strange that I'm an introvert, but I am. And he was the absolute extrovert. Just loved people, got charged by being around people. So yes, it's been really hard, but one of the best things that could have happened to me in the last year, it's just over, it's about 16 months, was that a friend sent me an article. It was an interview with Elizabeth Gilbert.
Hmm.
And Elizabeth Gilbert had lost her partner to cancer. And she basically said, the only way to get through this is to let grief have her way with you. So grief is a B-I-T-C-H. And she will come and smack you upside the head when you least expect it. Mm-hmm. And if you fight her, you are going to come off the worse for wear. And the only way to get through is to just submit. Let it wash over you and be in it, because the only way out of this is through. And for the most part, I have tried to follow that bit of advice.
Yeah.
Because it came fairly early on in my grief journey, and it is one of the best pieces of advice I could have been given. I kind of liken this period after losing love to the grief is similar to what I went through after I was raped, but it took me about 10 years to really recover. And I'm 57 now. I don't have 10 years. Mm. I needed to just fully immerse myself in this so that at some point sooner than later I can come out the other side and still have a life, because I am still alive. And the one thing that I know Laz would want for me is to live, because he was someone who did not waste a moment. He absolutely lived his life.
Our guest on Profiles this morning is actress Sandy Schultz. We are listening to her extraordinary... I said to you at the beginning, she's lived a million lives and we have maybe had a taste of two or three of those lives. I'm now going to put you on the spot and you're going to hate me for this, but I am imploring you to write a book. Is that something that possibly... Because in addition, I mean, people might not know, but when you write like a dream, is that something that you would do, are considering doing, don't want to do, are mulling over...
The irony is that in my youth, my long-distance youth, I was absolutely going to be a writer.
Right.
If my family had had the money for me to go and study independently, I would have gone to Rhodes and studied journalism. I've always been a poet. I have to admit, unfortunately, the first poem I wrote was only because somebody else in my class wrote one. And I thought, what the hell? I'm so much better than they are. But I got completely caught up in the writing bug. And I think I started doubting my writing ability over the years. And also, something rather scary happened over the last year where I started doubting my cognitive abilities. I would try to say something, and I just could not think of the word. Mm. And something that I've come across in my grief journey, on my grief journey, is something called widow's fog.
Yeah.
That there is part of the trauma of the grief actually just confuddles one.
Yeah, I mean, that makes complete sense.
And I feel like I am finally coming out of that. And yes, I do want to write a book. Partly also because Laszlo kept telling me to write.
Right.
The irony is that he had this amazing story of how he danced his way out of communist Hungary by winning a disco dancing competition, going to Austria for the prize. And on the night before he had to go back to Hungary, he walked into a refugee camp and became a refugee. He sought asylum, and that's how he wound up in the States. And he never wanted to write that book, but for some reason, he kept on wanting me to write a book. Mm. And yes, you are right. I have lived so many lives. I have had so many things happen to me. But I think it's time now to, you know, face the fear, because yes, there is a lot of fear involved. In wanting to write something good, yeah. But yeah, it's time to face the fear, knuckle down, and get to it.
You can't go back now because you've said it on national radio, so you have to do it now. So that's it now. You fell straight into my trap. Listen, the new series of Blood and Water is happening. It's coming available to stream on Netflix from Friday. For those who didn't catch the first season, you can still catch up, by the way, on Netflix.
Yes,
give us a synopsis. Tell us about your character, Principal Daniels. This has been, I should just say, I mean, I'm sort of throwing away and saying, oh, here it's happening. This has been a smash hit. It's just added its name to the list of quite phenomenal local productions that we've seen coming out of the country in the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
It has done incredibly well. And kudos to Gambit Films for what they have managed to put together. And kudos to the incredible young cast,
yeah,
who are now just rock stars after the first season. It really is an amazing story. Look, my character is pretty much peripheral. The story centers around the younger cast. But it's quite amazing. I encountered a young woman last year who just fangirled about my character. You know, she just went off about, you know, being a black woman, being a woman of color in a position of power and everything that you have to go through and how people try to beat you down. And she completely encapsulated all of the paths that we black women walk every single day. But yes, the first season got an incredible response. And I have to tell you, when we got those highly confidential set of scripts for the second season, I could not wait to turn the page to find out what would happen next. It is that exciting. Really.
I am looking... Sorry,
next week, because I think people are going to love season 2 even more than they loved season 1.
It's such a bingeable series. Thank goodness for Netflix, because I think we all have just completely changed the way that we view stuff. Gone are the days where you've had to really sort of wait week to week, because it's not good for somebody like me who's completely impatient and needs instant gratification. I'm looking forward to binge watching from Friday. It's a perfect Heritage Day binge watch. Yeah. Sandy, it's been such a treat to have you on the show. You really have just lived the most extraordinary life. I am looking forward to that book. As I said, you've said it on air now, you can't go back. It has been an absolute treat to have you on. Thank you so much. Sandy Schultz has been my Profiles guest this morning. You can catch her as Principal Daniels in season 2 of Blood and Water, which is available for streaming on Netflix from Friday.